This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes, where we don't play Despacito. Because we choose not to. Anyway, my name is Richard Bradbury in the studio with...
Jeff Landu.
And...
Audrey Raj.
We've got a whole bunch of stories for you this afternoon. We're going to be starting off with net neutrality in just a couple of minutes and why it's important to us. Moving then on to ransomware in radio and how that's made an appearance and could be vital. Some knowledge to know for us.
Mm-hmm.
How WhatsApp has been blocked in China and the Nigerian prince makes a comeback at the end of the show. But first, right, so back in 2015 in the US, millions of activists pressured the Federal Communications Commission to adopt historic net neutrality rules that keep the internet free and open in the US, that allows you to share and access information of your own without anybody interfering, right? But right now, this is in jeopardy in the US, right, Jeff?
Yes.
Tell us why and why it's important to us. Give us a bit of a primer.
So 2015 seemed like the day we won the internet again.
Right.
At least in the US, Americans have won back the freedom of the internet, right? But it seems like we're going to lose all that, especially the Americans, because on July 12th in the US, there was an internet-wide day of protests to fight for the preserving net neutrality against the FCC's new regulations. A lot of people have heard the term net neutrality.
Yeah.
Some may be quite familiar with this topic. I actually did a video in 2015 explaining about net neutrality. And I remember some of the comments was like, this doesn't really apply to us Malaysians, do we? And I was like, well, not yet, at least, because right now, you know, it's free. So what is net neutrality, you may ask, right? So when you go online, you have, you know, certain expectations. You expect it to be connected to whatever website that you want. You expect that your cable or phone company isn't messing with the data and is, you know, connecting you to all the websites and applications and content that you choose. So for example, if you stay in a house of, you know, you and your partner, Richard, and, you know, you're preferring a Google search and your partner prefers a different kind of search engine, Bing, for example, right? But just because an internet service provider gets more money from Google, they would prefer, they would speed up your access to Google instead of Bing.
Throttling, in a way, right?
So they're then managing, they're putting expectations of their own onto you, and you then thinking like, oh, Google's actually really faster than Bing. But it's actually not the case, right? So when you use internet, you want to have this net neutrality. It's the basic principle that prohibits internet service providers in the US like AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon from speeding up, slowing down, or blocking any content, applications, or websites that you want to use. It's the how the internet has always worked.
So it's basically just free and unregulated, uncontrolled, or just not touched, lah.
Yeah, it's not free because you are paying AT&T, Comcast, and all. So you are paying a certain amount of money for a door to the internet. But you know, from there, it's, you know, what they do once you've entered the door shouldn't be regulated at all.
Shouldn't be touched.
It shouldn't be touched because I'm already paying the, you know, the cover charge to go inside the internet club. So once I'm in the club, why should I be, you know, be measured of where I can go in order to reach that destination? So that is net neutrality itself. Okay. Without net neutrality, cable and phone companies, they could basically carve the internet into a fast and slow lane. So you have, you know, different highways and all. So an ISP could slow down its competitors' content or blocking political opinions and disagreeing with it. And ISPs could also charge extra fees to, you know, few content companies that could afford to pay for, you know, for these kind of things.
So we saw a little bit of that a while ago when certain ISPs in the US started throttling on stuff like YouTube.
Yes.
And there was a big, you know, a whole bunch of people getting together and saying, why the heck is Comcast throttling YouTube?
Yeah. Well, right. The reason is because Google has their own fiber platform, right? So because Google is an ISP and you're using their services, so Comcast or AT&T or any other service provider will be like, I don't want my users to be going onto that site so often. What I'm going to do is, because I have probably my own video streaming services, and I'm going to push that one out instead. So when, if you're a subscriber of an ISP type A, they would push out just whatever type A is partnering with, whoever's paying type A to promote on their platform, whereas it shouldn't be that case. If I want to access YouTube, I should have the same kind of speed or access anyone else on any other kind of internet service provider has, right?
Right.
So the internet without net neutrality basically isn't quite the internet. And a lot of people saying that, oh, you know, July 12th seemed like a good day because it seemed like we won in some ways. A lot of companies from Netflix and Google and everyone came out, Reddit, everyone came out against, you know, of this new regulations. However, it's not quite really the story, though. So I'll get to what Trump administration recently just said about net neutrality. But there's actually an enormous impact on the companies as well, for small and large organizations. So companies that have the money to invest in ISPs or to, you know, partner up with ISPs and to push out a certain content would be getting preferred treatment over, you know, new startup companies or companies that don't have the access to, you know, the funds to push out their services. So it's like a Google search.
Like small mom and pop stores, yeah, for example, who don't have Walmart's money to put on a decent website or something like that.
Exactly.
Walmart could pay the ISPs and say, make sure traffic to my website is faster than, say, perhaps Audrey Raj's Tateri place or something like that.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
So this could create a monopoly by all these big guns, right?
Mm. So, you know, when they have these things, they are able to block websites or content or applications that they don't like. And then after a decade long, this net neutrality thing is not just new. It's been very long already. The FCC in 2015, they actually, you know, had this Title II of the Communications Act. And this kind of gave internet users the strongest protections possible. But ever since then, opponents have done everything they can to destroy this Title II, especially the FCC chairman Ajit Pai.
He's a
former Verizon lawyer.
Right.
Right. So he has a different kind of viewing in terms of, you know, why ISP providers are struggling to cope. His view is like ISP providers are struggling to cope with the amount of data that we're consuming and they're not making enough money is because they are restricted to do what, you know, they could do with the data that they're getting from us. The argument is that I'm already paying you, so why should you be making off more money from what I'm paying you? If Facebook is paying me for, I have to pay for Facebook for an account and do all these kind of things, Facebook are not allowed to monetize my data because it's me. I'm paying you to host my digital footprint into whatever servers that you're running. Same goes with ISP. I'm paying a monthly fee to you, so you shouldn't be, you know, dictating where I go. If you're providing a free internet service, it's a different story altogether, right? I'm a product of whatever you want me to do, right? Hence, you know, we rely on Facebook, and if we see Facebook pushing, you know, sponsored posts and content that we don't like, but we don't fight and, like, we don't scream and shout about it because, hey, Facebook is free, so you expect them to do this. The problem with it, ISPs are not allowed to do this because they are, we
pay for
them.
Their service.
We're paying for their service, right? So Ajit Pai wants to ditch Title II, and he wants to the FCC to return to a light touch Title I approach. Translation, basically, Ajit Pai wants to give control to the internet to the very companies that basically violated net neutrality years before FCC adopted its current rules in 2015. Title I would do nothing to protect internet users like, you know, all of us, right? Mm. And without net neutrality, millions of, you know, small business owners by people of you know, color or, you know, race that have problems wouldn't be able to compete against, you know, the larger corporations that go online, which would be, you know, an economic problem.
Because if those bigger companies disagree with your political stance,
that's it,
or what you're saying, they could then block the traffic to your website, right?
Yeah,
in a nutshell.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So it's crucial for, you know, small business owners, startup entrepreneurs to rely on an open internet to launch their business, create markets, advertise their products and service, and also to reach their customers. We need an open internet to sort of, you know, foster job growth, the competition, and also innovation. Now, many activists are saying that July 12th was seemed like a victory because, you know, there were many companies that came out against you know, the new FCC's ruling. But cynics are saying that the protests actually made very, very low impact because just recently the Trump administration has just came out and said that they are in favor of the FCC's effort to overturn net neutrality.
Of course they are.
Of course they are, right? So the White House Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said that the previous administration went about this the wrong way by imposing rules on ISP through the FCC's Title II rulemaking power. We support the FCC's chair effort to review and consider rolling back these rules and believe the best way to get fair rules for everyone is for Congress to take action and create a regulatory and economic certainty. Now, this feels like Trump's administration administration is just trying to undo everything that the previous administration has been done. Like, if someone were to tell the Trump administration that the previous administration was in support of oxygen, you would be surprised of what they would do next. I am very sure of it. It just feels like it, because that's how every news report that comes out from, you know, from Trump administrations or from the White House is that, yes, we are going back to the previous administration's flaws because it was wrong. Like, is it really wrong? I mean, yes, the previous administration did some things right, did some things wrong, but Trump's administration just feels like we're going to undo everything.
It's basically like, I don't like what you've done, therefore I'm doing what I want to do. Mm.
Yeah, it's like Obamacare, kill.
Right.
Kill. Title 2, kill.
Right.
Yeah. Just, so go on. Thankfully, here in Malaysia, we're still all right in that sense. We don't have a problem yet. And I say yet because ISPs here are struggling, you know, with that internet freedom. We do block certain sites and content, but we don't throttle in your direction of where you want to go. You can still use Google and Bing and whatever sites you want to use. It's just some certain websites are blocked. If this gets overturned in the US and ISP starts making more money, it's only a sign of what ISPs from around the world looking at, you know, the greatest country in the whole world, America, has done and seeing that, hey, Comcast, AT&T and Verizon seems to be making a lot more money from our data and using our data to, you know, to create our own pathway of the internet. What's stopping, you know, ISPs from here in Malaysia or just anywhere in the world following the same suit as well? Right?
Exactly. If they can do it, why can't we?
Yeah.
Just a couple of things that I want to add. Companies like Walmart, for example, the US's largest private employer, they've got a long history of monitoring employees' online activities as workers move to unionize. Of course, they don't want them to unionize. They do that. They can say, you know, you've got an online, you've got together online, therefore your job is at risk. Also, we look at companies like some of the, like you say, the bigger telecoms companies. In Verizon, for example, in 2016, proposed cuts to workers so deep that 40,000 members had to go and form a union, went on strike for more than a month, and actually won. Comcast, in the home city of Philadelphia, opposed a citywide paid sick leave policy back in 2014. Mm. These are the companies that are running the U.S.'s internet. You know, everything that has to do with politics or religion or music or anything that is posted online has to go through these companies. What is happening, to be blunt, is that the internet in the US is becoming far more politicized.
Yes.
That's the issue,
yes,
right?
That is clearly the issue, because it's just the fear of people have, you know, too many voices and they could, so many platforms, and, you know, it just feels like for ISPs, it's like, if this happens, it's like you said, right? If it's against what they believe in terms of the political stance, because there's always two sides of, you know, right, politicals, right? That's politics. So if I'm in Camp A, I'm going to shut everything from Camp B.
But that's really not fair, because disruption is the way of the world. It is today. It's everything. And
you look at technology companies, they are not politically driven, but look at how far they've come because they're not just tied up into this. But the problem with this is you're bringing politics into technology, which is two separate things, guys. Yeah. Just stay away.
Speaking of a walled off internet garden, we'll be touching on a story a little bit later on that we mentioned about
China
being shut down in China and what impact that could have worldwide. It's a big thing. We need to take a little break and a little bit of a breather. Jeff needs to catch his breath. If you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, and we are, of course, on Twitter at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after the stroke. BFM 89.9.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Rich Bradbury, and
Audrey Rudd.
And
Jeff Sandu.
We're going to be giving you some insider secrets in just a couple of minutes. But I need to tell you this story before I can reveal some of these insider secrets.
Uh-oh.
So for the last month, there's a radio station in San Francisco. It's a public radio station, so funding comes from the public and donations and things. They're called KQED. Mm. They've been recovering from a massive ransomware attack. And of course, Jeff, you know all about that. We've spoken about it a few times. And the infection began on June the 15th of this year. More than a month later now, a lot of their crucial systems remain offline.
Wow.
And And the guy from the radio station says, it's like we've been bombed back to 20 years ago, technology-wise.
So, oh, dear.
Right. The initial,
I feel his pain.
Right. The initial damage from the attack was severe. It locked hard drives. It erased pre-recorded segments. Yes, folks, those are a thing.
Oh, my God.
It brought down the station's internal email server. Their online broadcast was offline for more than 12 hours. The office Wi-Fi remained offline for several days.
Ooh.
And this is my favorite part of this whole article. As systems recover, bear in mind I'm reading this from a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
As systems recover, the station has been forced to print and manually distribute scripts. Broadcasters have also returned to timing segments with a stopwatch without a more intricate content management system.
Oh my God.
Right. Okay.
I feel bad for laughing.
Right.
You know, because but we are so close into this.
Yes.
We understand every single pain.
Folks at home and the folks who are listening, right, there are times before we come in to do this show that we are begging that the printer is working.
Yeah.
We are begging that Google Docs is working, you know. Radio is not magic. You know, it's a lot of it is smoke and mirrors, right?
We'd like you to believe that radio is magic. We'd
and
like
we're
you to
so
believe.
Smooth and we're, you know, it doesn't have
But a small little radio station like this, you know, who are publicly funded, and these people, you know, they want millions and millions of dollars to get this radio station back online. And for me, radio has always been such a big thing. It's always been a community-driven thing, you know. So radio stations that are publicly funded, for me, I think is something really important. And it breaks my heart that a little tiny radio station like this has,
Well, obviously these attackers,
they've
got no idea what a radio station, how it works. Maybe they get that, but how much money we make.
Exactly.
Because they demanded for tens of millions of dollars from a station that's funded by the public.
I mean, I was in a store yesterday and having a conversation with a fella there, you know, and he was like, oh, you must do really well at radio. You must get paid really, really well. I almost fell off my stool, you know, and I'm like, you know, I don't do bad, but I'm not a millionaire. I can't go out and buy a car. You know, I'm barely struggling with a scooter.
But like you said, Jeff, earlier, I mean, you can really empathize with them because you feel, we feel your pain, San Francisco's KQED.
Just earlier on today for the 10 o'clock show, Karamjit Singh just came on like 5 minutes before he was supposed to go on air. And I'm rushing
you
to the printer.
You mean he was early this time?
Well, he was on time at 10:03. So, you know, even then, I'm rushing to the printer, like get it print, and I'm running to the studio. It's so manual labor work.
It is.
And radio, actually, you know, and except for newer radio stations that have, you know, recently just got funded and started opening up and you can invest in new technology, generally, most of the radio stations that I've been to from around the world are still stuck in the 90s.
Absolutely.
Mm. We are still using the 90s technology. We're still using, you know, internal systems that would do our clocks management, our timing, our ads and traffic. All these are run in 90s kind of technology. The only thing that's like current is for us is like the podcast. You know, we would run on, you know, Amazon servers and stuff like that. But like, you know, for us in terms of the every single radio station in the world.
Ooh, back in the day,
it's still stuck in the 90s.
I used to use tape.
Yeah.
And I had to record onto tape. And if I'm doing segments for promos, I'd have to cut it with a real pair of scissors.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
But
yeah.
Even though, you know, like you said, you know, most radio stations are stuck in the 90s and still using like for an emergency player. Maybe we still use Winamp.
Don't tell people that.
Who uses Winamp? Right? But then again, radio is still relevant.
Yes.
You still get in your car and the first thing you do is you turn on the radio.
97.1% Malaysians still listen to radio. I think it's even higher. It's 99.7% or something like that. Last year when I had when I was moderating one of the Asia radio conferences, it was a very high number.
Yeah.
But the thing is, because we're still stuck in the 90s, we need to really figure out a way that we can update our systems. Now, the reason why I say we're stuck in the 90s is because a lot of these, you know, servers that we are running on is still using, you know, Microsoft Windows 97, Windows XP or XP Server 2000. These are obsolete at this point of time. And we've seen Microsoft releasing statements that they are not going to, you know, hand out support anymore. Even Java, for example, I see some of our computers in our BFM here are still asking for a Java update that was released in 2014.
Right.
And we've not updated them. And always when I talk about ransomware, it's always about, you know, what can we do to, you know, keep ourselves safe from ransomware? And you're like, just keep your PCs updated all the time.
But like you say, Jeff, it's not just this radio station.
No, I'm talking about the world.
The majority of radio stations, you walk into it and almost every radio station is almost an identikit.
Yes.
You know, very, very similar. Some of them are a little bit
beautiful that way.
Right. Some of them are a little flashier. They've got lights. They've got neon. They make you, they try to convince you that there's something else.
There's some radio stations in malls as well that, you know, try to be hip and cool. But you know what? I love the neighborhood feel of a
station. Me too.
Yeah. Well, radio, feel sorry for those guys. Yeah.
Radio is still radio. It's still something that we all look for. I mean, I look forward to listening to the radio every day. And if you want to know how relevant radio is to Malaysians, go check out one of the podcasts that I think Jeff did with James Critlin. He's a radio futurologist.
Yes.
That came out actually earlier this year in February for World Radio Day. It's called Is Radio Still Relevant? That's podcasted on the BFM website, and you can also find it on our mobile app.
Go check it out.
She's reading that from a Google Doc, you know.
I'm just kidding.
Terrible, Rich. At least he's better off than you using a paper being printed on. 90s technology.
And a pen. I have a pen in my hand as well, right?
You write?
I do. Right, it's time for us to take a break while I slap Jeff around. If you want to get in touch via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Of course, if you want to get on Twitter, at BFM Radio. That's new tech. This is old tech. It is REM, Radio Free Europe, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ow!
Breaking Financial Matters, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury with
Jeff Sandu
and
Audrey Raj.
So far, we've had some really interesting debate about net neutrality.
It wasn't really a debate, it was everyone's in support.
Right.
Of
having a neutral internet.
Yes.
Tinternet. We then spoke about radio and ransomware. Moving on to something else now that affects most of us, or a service that affects most of us that we use an awful lot of, WhatsApp in China. China have disrupted the WhatsApp service in an online clampdown just on the back of them banning all VPNs as well. What's going on, Jeff?
So it's the last of Facebook's major product that was still working in China has just been sort of, you know, gotten the chop from Chinese government on Tuesday, as they, like you mentioned, they're tightening up its control over the internet. So WhatsApp is has been used across the globe, as you mentioned. It's very popular, but it's partly blocked at this point of time by Chinese filters, leaving a lot of people just unable to send videos and photos, and some people are unable to send text. So it's a partial block, which is a bit weird. Like, why would you do that, right? So the disruption of WhatsApp was the latest of the long line of digital big digital services running up against China's, you know, the great firewall, right? The country's system of internet filters in control. So in recent weeks, the government has appeared to increase its grip on online crackdown by a perfect storm of political sensitive news that's been spreading around, important events, and also a new cybersecurity law that we did mention about this that went into effect last month. A lot of people, actually, a lot of companies still don't quite know what is this new cybersecurity law. So the law, which was rubber stamped by the country's parliament last year, is part of a wide-ranging efforts by Beijing to manage the internet within China's borders. And those efforts have been stepped up in recent years because of things like Edward Snowden, the whistleblower, and the former American intelligence contractor revealed that, you know, foreign technology firms could help governments to spy. So that's when Chinese started on red alert and decided to do all this. And while Chinese officials say that the new rules will help to guard against cyber attacks and prevent terrorism, critics, many of them are businesses, they have their concerns. So sites that are hosting popular foreign television shows, they've had their videos taken down. Tools used to skirt around censors, VPNs and stuff, have faced more frequent disruptions. And in an article, the mouthpiece of the country's Communist Party scolded the Chinese internet company Tencent over a popular video game. They're calling it too addictive.
We talked about this recently.
Yeah. So it's really just a very different kind of world in China.
And I also, the timing for this is a bit suspect as well, right? Because the 19th Party Congress that happens like every five years. It's just a month away.
The CPPCC.
And they want to try, they always try and keep things very stable and happy and hunky-dory. And
It's a terrifying experience when you're living there and this thing is happening. There are literally tanks rolling down the streets. There are armed guards on the corners of the subway stations. All kinds of stuff. And it's all just to make things, you know, run a little bit smoother, so to speak.
Well, not really in the internet space because WhatsApp, which had generally avoided major disruptions in China despite the full block of Facebook and Instagram, they've appeared to be now a victim of these circumstances.
Right.
Yeah, but what's the big deal with WhatsApp in China? Because, like, I know that WhatsApp has more than a billion active users around the world, but in China alone, WeChat has half a billion, right?
Yes.
So why bother with
one
with
word,
WhatsApp?
Encryption. They have end-to-end encryption, whereas WeChat does not.
So Chinese government can't see what is going on in WhatsApp systems, right? There is no servers in China, WhatsApp servers in China. There's no way for them to monitor what's happening within WhatsApp's ecosystem. Whereas for Tencent and, you know, WeChat and all the other services, the Weibo and the Baidu and all those other platforms, they're all based and hosted in China, where Chinese government can, you know, enforce rules for you to, you know, you got to open up back doors, you got to allow us to see and view, and we got to monitor every single footprint that has stepped onto the Chinese internet, right?
That is also why, I guess, Apple opened their
data
center
Correct.
In China. So.
Correct.
So, you know, the block against WhatsApp originated with the government, according to a person familiar with the situation who declined to be named because they were not authorized to speak on the record about the disruption. Security experts have also verified that partial disruptions in China have started already. And the actions by the Chinese governments are another sort of a setback for Facebook in the country that has been very difficult for Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg's team to crack, right?
It's even though he is speaking Chinese.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Like, its flagship site was blocked in 2009 after an ethnic unrest in the Western China. Instagram followed in 2014 following the protests that fell in Hong Kong. And in beginning in late 2014, Facebook began an aggressive campaign to woo the Chinese government and get its main social network back into the country. As part of its process, Mark Zuckerberg showed off his language chops, as you mentioned, Rich, speaking Chinese at the conference, and later he dined with President Xi Jinping during a state visit during the United States. But Facebook efforts have showed very little over the past year because it's just going nowhere.
And you know what? They will never make inroads into China, no matter how hard they try. It will never happen. And you know why? Because Facebook is as pervasive as the Chinese government is to WeChat. It's true.
Yes.
You know, and when you get two sharks swimming around in the same pool, you know, one of them is going to end up dead. You know?
Wasn't Facebook trying to introduce a version that would allow the Chinese government to regulate the content on the social network?
And they did for a while. They released a wholly Chinese version of Facebook that allowed backdoors in and one thing or another. You had to log in. In fact, you had to create an account that was separate from your true Facebook account if you want. But if we look back at stuff like WeChat, what you got to look at is that in the background, it is totally controlled by the Chinese government. And it's this really clever way of soft controlling people, you know. They're helping to move away from a cash-based society slowly. They're wanting to phase out cash. You've seen everything has been bought via WeChat. You can load up stuff on WeChat. You can make purchases on WeChat. Eventually, I think this is going to be a big thing, you know.
Yeah.
We know that China are really pushing for this. It's for people who are living out in the outskirts, though, in the countryside. They're not, obviously, they're still using WeChat, but they do not realize how big of a behemoth this thing is going to be. And we were talking, Jeff, the other day about these cryptocurrency exchanges that have been opening up in China as well. Of course, this is all proving, you know, this movement slowly but surely towards a truly cashless country. And if China manages to pull this off, this is genuinely world-changing.
Yeah, there have been calls for the Chinese government to sort of take a different approach when it comes to this kind of things. Instead of doing like a sledgehammer ban, they should just try and find different ways to, you know, curb what they're worried of, which is, you know, excess, they're worried about excess censorships and, you know, damaging the country's ability to access crucial information, scientific papers, educational, and all, you know, even politics as well. They're just trying to protect themselves. As Donald Trump would say, China would want to protect China and US would want to protect US, right? So we get that. We get that WeChat is big as well around the world. But this is limiting what outsiders in terms of innovation can actually help Chinese governments and even just the Chinese population itself.
I mean, the beautiful thing about WeChat is that when you're in China, it's this amazing app that does everything. But you come out of China and it's just another messaging app. You can't use half of the services. So, you know, It's six of one and half a dozen of the other, so to speak.
Yeah, so it's not very clear yet whether the censorship on WhatsApp or the block on WhatsApp is intentional on the photos and videos and not so much for text. And is it just a prelude to a complete blockage of WhatsApp as well? Previous partial blocks have sometimes led to a full ban, and they have been eventually removed by the government, and you know the service just sort of got out of the country itself.
And at the moment, both WhatsApp and the Chinese government aren't making any statements about this.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's all with no group messaging, so to speak. Sorry, I just had to do that. Right, okay, we're going to take a very short break. We're going to play some music from Weezer. We've got Buddy Holly coming up. And when we come back, the return of the Nigerian Prince of sorts. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise BizBytes. If you missed any part of this show, head over to bfm.my where you can download the podcast. You can also listen to the show on the app. It is available in the App Store or on Google Play. And of course, we are now CarPlay enabled. So we've got through net neutrality, radio ransomware, WhatsApp being blocked in China, and now Return of the Prince. See?
Return of the Prince?
It's not quite the same as Return of the Mac.
Return of the Mac.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, so I'm sure...
I just sang on live radio. I've never done that. I do realize that.
That's the first for everything.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully
isn't it a bit gloomy today, the weather, though, right?
Oh, he's asking for another one, isn't he? Go on, Audrey. Tell us about this Nigerian prince.
So I'm sure most of us have received, at least at some point of our lives, an email from a Nigerian prince.
Yes.
Telling us of his troubles.
He's got too much of money.
He's just got too much of money. He's just trying to
help.
Yeah. Help
yeah.
you, you know.
Let me but give you some of my money.
Let me give you some of my money, but then again, I need you to help first. Send right. me some money first.
Right. You got to help yourself before I can help you in a way, right? It's one of those kind of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
haven't these things gone away then?
No. Well, actually, they're actually more sophisticated nowadays because back then when you received these emails from these Nigerian princes, there were always like some grammatical errors or like some really fake looking bank account logo or something like that. And nowadays, you know, you can hardly tell. It's like a legitimate bank logo. There aren't any grammatical errors or spelling errors in the email. So it really looks
They've
legit.
They've upped their game.
But everyone knows about the email from the Nigerian prince, right?
Right. Mm.
So, of course, now these Nigerian phishing scammers, they've upped their game. They're making headlines again. And this time, it's apparently because there's been a surge in phishing and payment interception attacks on companies. And according to Kaspersky's Labs, this time these Nigerian scammers, they are stealing project and operational plans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have really upped their game. You know, it's no longer...
Ooh, that's a big difference.
No longer mom and pops. Now they're going for like the big guns, right? So these attacks are called the business email compromise attacks, and they are often linked to Nigeria. These scammers, they seek to hijack genuine business accounts, which attackers then can monitor for financial transactions, and they will intercept and redirect when they want to. So they're not exactly attacking you at one go and just taking what you have in your account. They will actually watch what you do and how you transact, and then later... Mm-hmm. They will come in when necessary as like the middleman and change the account details and they will take... So on a project basis, so you might not even know that your money is being siphoned off, but you make a payment for a project, you make a payment for a deal or something like that, and they actually swipe your money that way. And attacks have been made against over 500 industrial, transport and logistics companies in 50 countries in this... was tracked in the month of October 2016 alone. So 500 industrial transport and logistics companies in 50 countries in 1 month alone.
Looking at this distribution map of global distribution of Nigerian phishing attacks, looking at the map of the hotspots, Russia has had the most attacks.
Mm.
That's interesting. Mm. They're normally the ones doing the attacking.
Attacking
it's true,
themselves,
though, right?
Probably.
Yeah, and you want to know how they do this, right? So
yeah, I do.
Basically,
because I want to know how to prevent it.
So once again, you'll receive a carefully crafted phishing email that appears to originate from a company's supplier, or a commercial organization.
Someone you're familiar with in dealing with, because they study you before they attack you now.
Exactly. Ah, right. And then they use like malware that's cheaply available on the black market to steal your confidential data, install a remote administration registration tool on your infected system, and that's the way they gain access. And it's really difficult, I said earlier, like, it's difficult for a victim to realize that they're being duped as the attacker redirects messages to their own mailbox, looking for these transactions. And then, you know, via the classic man-in-the-middle attack, the attacker replaces the account details of a legitimate seller's invoice with the attacker's own. And then, you know, so it's more than a monetary loss for these companies because they have access, they have screenshots of your
absolutely everything you've been doing,
of your project plans as well as technical drawings. This is the kind of data that they steal, and that's why this is such a big deal. Yeah. So
what's interesting here is that Kaspersky's lab researchers, they found it that it could be just one cyber criminal group behind these attacks, making use of different malwares or a number of different groups cooperating and sharing resources. And notably, they said most of the domains were registered to residents of Nigeria. I'm just interested, why Nigeria? I'm very certain that it's not exactly people in Nigeria itself. It could be from somewhere else that are spoofing that, you know, I could register a site based in Holland if I want to do it as well and have a fake address, a fake name. Everything's completely fake. Thanks to net neutrality, in a sense, right? Yeah. So, but, like, you know, I think it's just really, really scary to see how, you know, people are still doing same old attacks. It's not a surprise. So many interviews that we've done over the number of months and years that it's always just been the same case. The way that we attack is still the same. They will send you a message first. It's only when you open your door, it's when they walk in. Previously, it just felt like a complete stranger knocking on your door. Mm. Nowadays, though, it's like, you know, it's like Mystique in X-Men. She can just morph into any kind of, you know, things that you're so comfortable with, and you just believe that, oh my God, yeah, it's really this person. Like, we've seen scams on Facebook Messenger as well, where people will hack into a profile, and then because on Facebook they know who your mom and pop is, and they would send a message to your mom and say, hey mom, sorry, I'm just stuck in this thing. Like, could you send me some cash? By the way, my account is frozen. Could you send it to my friend's account? Account number is this. Your mom would receive the message and go like, oh wow, like, you know, Richard really needs help and I will send you some cash to this account, but you
wouldn't
know,
be the first time.
It wouldn't. Yeah, exactly.
And so the way to go around this is the usual things that we tell you on TechTalk all the time. Email security, being careful with your passwords.
Be careful with who you deal with whenever it comes to anything that they ask you to download. Or if you're downloading an image, if you're downloading a video, if you're downloading a PDF file, it's generally, I would say, safe. But if you're downloading a file that, given your email says, we're not quite sure what file is this, it's unsupported file, don't download. Call up the person. Go back to the traditional way. Send him a pigeon mail, you know, try to do something to get in touch with him.
Hang on a minute.
All right.
Weren't you mocking my pen and paper just a few minutes ago?
Yeah, but it takes a long time. If you just call the person, like, hey, Rich, did you actually send me this attachment? Even on WhatsApp as well, people send you links. Don't click on them because your phone has so many information, especially we do mobile banking on our phone, so stop it.
All right. We've come to the end of the show, folks. We've got to go through some of the stuff that we talked about today. We had a really passionate discussion, rant, whatever you want to call it, at the top of the show about net neutrality. If you missed that, do go to the podcast and download it. Great discussion. We then moved on to Radio Ransomware.
Yeah.
Jeff, then what did you talk about
next?
Well,
I talked about WhatsApp being blocked in China. Mm-hmm. It's now partially blocked. It could be fully blocked in a matter of days or months.
And then we finished off, of course, with the wonderful...
Yes, the next generation of the Nigerian prince scam. Nigerian phishing scammers that are stealing more than just money. They're stealing your plans, your projects, your... data.
Your life
is
essentially what they're stealing. So on the Breakfast Grill replay today?
Yeah, so the Morning Run spoke to Dato' Muhammad Hasla Amin. He's the chairman of Matrix Concept Holdings Berhad. It's a company that has won the Forbes Asia 200 Best Under a Billion Award in 2014. So the Morning Run guys spoke to them about how the company is differentiating itself from, you know, a very crowded property development space. Everyone is doing something in the property space.
Okay, great show today then. As I mentioned earlier, if you missed any part of this show, do head over to bfm.my where you can download the podcast. You can also get our app in the Apple App Store. And of course, we are on Google Play. And we are now CarPlay enabled if your car is also. That was really Malaysian grammar there.
Yes.
Wow. What was that? That was so weird. Right, it's time for us, definitely time for me to take a break.
Yes.
I think I need a little bit of a nap. I'm getting old, remember, Jeff? Right, it is the end of the show, of course. We will be back tomorrow from Deepest Darkest Band at Otama when it is Fun Friday here on Enterprise Biz Bytes. You have been listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.